Welcome, 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 all you beautiful, brilliant people who continue to listen to Justice League Revisited. I know you're all fans of the TV series, because why wouldn't you be? It's one of the best animated shows in existence, and that's a hill I will die on gladly. With me, dying on that same hill, is my wonderful co-host, Susan Eisenberg.
Wait, how did I get roped into this?
Death by proxy, I think that's how it goes.
All right. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm well, good to see you.
You too, it's been a while since we recorded.
Yeah, it has. Well, and we both like went away, we had little trips, and so it's good to see you. It's good to see your face. Even though the listeners can't see your face, I get to see your face.
That's your cross to bear, isn't it?
But yeah, it is.
It is. I often think about how, you know, it must have been for you guys in the booth, because it is easier when I do my, you know, when I do my radio show, I'm isolated sometimes. I don't always get to see the person. But doing this, I get that feeling for what you guys were able to look across the booth at each other and get that. So that it does add something to when you're recording, just be able to see the other person.
It makes a huge difference. And I feel like when we're doing this now, we're recording audio only, but we're recording it, you know, on cameras. I mean, so we see each other, and it's just, you know, you see people's expressions. You know, it just makes it so personal, that, you know, that, I mean, I love that. I mean, there's just no replacement for recording together in a booth.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful. I know every actor, every person who walked into that recording booth at Warner Brothers is grateful that we got to do that all together. I can't imagine not having had that experience with all of us. And you and I had that experience last time when we were recording with a couple of people. It wasn't just you and I and one guest. We've had now, you know, episodes where we've had a couple of guests.
Yeah.
Look at us.
Stan and Maria were both on. I know.
Right.
This is an episode too, where when I was talking about guests and people in the room, my goodness, we had so many great guests. So for those of you listening, we are covering the two-parter Legends, which was episode 18 and 19 in airing order. The ninth story overall, it was directed by Dan Reba. Writer was Andrew Kreisberg. This was part one on April 21st, 2002. Part two was on April 28th, 2002, 1 week later. It had an amazing cast, which if I start listing the cast, we'll eat up all of our time. So I'll make sure during the course of our interview that we mention the cast and who was in it, because it had an incredible lineup of talent, which I think this was one of the first episodes of the original Justice League series where you had just boom, like almost an entire second cast.
It was huge, which is good, because it got us, you know, it gave us a little preparation for Justice League Unlimited.
Right. Yeah. Other than Secret Society, Injustice for All. I mean, this was probably the because like you're not in this episode, and Superman and Batman are there like for a blink and you'll miss them. So this wasn't like twofold. This was, but you added the Justice Guild of America and you added the other players who were in this. And my goodness, amazing.
And it was a very, I loved this episode. I loved revisiting it. I loved how emotional it made me feel with Phil Lamar's character, you know, with Green Lantern. And we'll talk about that later during the episode. I'm sure we'll bring it up. But I just, you know, knowing Phil is such a comic book fan and such a comic book aficionado, and then having his character be one as well, I got such a kick out of that.
That was one of the first notes I made. Yeah, it was absolutely, I was like, ah!
It's at the top of my notebook. It's literally Phil, comic book nerd, because it made me so happy watching that aspect and having Green Lantern filled out in that way with that information, and the fact that it correlated to Phil in real life. Just tremendous. It was a very multi-layered script, and you know, not being a comic book or cartoon nerd myself, I'll probably not say a lot during this episode. I'm going to defer to you.
I've got a lot to say.
Okay, good. Because I love how much was in this episode, but at the same time, I felt very lost because I was like, I don't know what that means. So hopefully you will be able to explain it to me as we go on in this episode.
I'll do my very best. And of course, our guest for this one, Jennifer Hale, has an incredible backlog of work she's done, just her IMDb page, you would kill an entire rainforest if you tried to print off her list on IMDb. It's very impressive. And this will be her first time joining us on the show. And I know, Susan, it's like, we need to have more women on the show, which finally we're getting another woman. So we missed out on having the leader at Manus with us on the musical episode, but we've had Maria on and now we get Jennifer.
Yeah, no. And I think our upcoming guests are women. So that makes me very happy. And if you're going to have a female guest on your show, there's none better than Jennifer Hale. She is a remarkable woman and uber talented and just a great person. Yeah. I'm so looking forward to you meeting her because she's a gem. She is just a gem in what she's done and created and how prolific she is and how much longevity she's had in her career. She's going to be wonderful. I just know it.
So with that said, we're going to roll right into it. We had such a great response to our episode covering War World that had Stan and Maria on. We figured, let's do three guests next time. So we've got, as we cover this episode of Legends, we've got Jennifer Hale, who voiced Black Siren. We've got the series director, I should say the episode director, Dan Reba. And of course, we have our Green Lantern himself, Phil LaMarr. This is so exciting to have a full house on the show today.
Woohoo! So happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
So this is Dan and Phil have been on the show before. We're just going to throw Jennifer right into the deep end and just we'll see how this
she
goes.
She can handle it.
I'm sure.
She can. The one thing I know about Jennifer Hale, she can handle the deep end.
I can handle me a deep end. Just bring it on.
Yes, she can.
So you went on to famously voice Giganta in the Justice League Unlimited series. I've got my San Diego Comic-Con exclusive Giganta that I have to have you sign for me at some point, Jennifer. But
yes,
this was your first foray into the Justice League animated world. So I'll ask the basic question we ask everyone. Were you a comic fan growing up? Did you have just a passing knowledge of these characters? Talk a little bit about your base to start.
I was not even cool enough to be a comic book fan when I was growing up. I was in massive novels and like reading Agatha Christie at age 12 and nerding out over stuff. I was not that cool. I didn't know. I wasn't actually allowed to watch cartoons at all. I was very restricted in what I was allowed to do. And I didn't watch them until I started working in them. And I was like, oh, these are awesome. This is really cool. What is it? Oh, that's what I did. Oh, yeah.
You voice,
but I'm ready, fire, aim anyway. So it works out. Yeah.
You voice so many other characters, too. I mean, I was playing Metal Gear Solid there. I'm like, oh, that's Jennifer. Because we had Paul Eiding on my show not that long ago talking about the game. Obviously, Black Cat, Felicia Hardy, and Spider-Man, the animated series. You went on to voice Killer Frost after this series was done. So you've kept your foot in there. And I know you probably can't talk about it, but you're voicing a character in the new X-Men 97 on Disney Plus. So that's something we'd like to get into, but we're going to focus on the episode we're at hand for now, though. So this is great to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Just fabulous to be here, and I'm so happy to see you guys.
And Phil, this what I loved about this episode, as I'm going through it, as I'm watching, I'm like, gosh, I wish we had Phil for this one. So it's just serendipitous that you're on, because as soon as Green Lantern says he's got his monologue, I grew up reading these comic books. My uncle had a huge comic book collection. I'm like, well, Phil actually had the comic book collection, not so much his uncle.
Right.
But this was the perfect role to have Green Lantern say those lines, because my goodness, it's perfect.
Yes, and they did write them. I didn't make up the lines. Just, you know, this was not a docu episode.
Okay. I used to love that. I used to love being in sessions, Phil, and you would come in and you actually would have a new edition of something in your hand.
Always.
Some new comic book that you were reading. And I'm like, man, when am I going to be as cool as Phil?
He was the only one of the seven of us who knew what was going on, Jennifer.
Yes.
I mean, he knew. He knew what was happening. And I just thought, wow, how perfect is it that they have this character portrayed by Phil loving the comic books? It was just serendipity, or was it? I mean, were the writers aware that Phil had this love and passion? And so how did that all come about, Dan Reba?
I'm not sure, because I wasn't in the writer's room, but I cannot imagine that wasn't the case. It really didn't make any sense. Our Flash wouldn't have been that character. And even though in the comics, the Flash kind of knew of the Flash from the comics, it's very complicated. Phil knows what I'm talking about, you know. But in our version, Green Lantern, it made more sense.
This episode was complicated. I was taking notes on this episode, and I thought, I can't wait to do this podcast because I have a gazillion questions.
And it was
Right. You said the same thing.
A whole different way for parallel, you know, Justice Leagues. You know, in the comics, it was just Earth 1, Earth 2, you know. But here, it was coming. I don't want to spoil it for the people who haven't seen the episode yet. But another version of the Justice League was created in a completely new way.
And that was one of the questions, that one of the reasons I reached out, because I said, Dan, I know this is really last minute, Dan, but we've got Jennifer on for this. Again, I didn't know we had Phil at this point. I said, I've got questions. Is there any way you could jump on? Of course, Dan, being the incredible human being he is, said, sure, why not? My garage is leaking, but I'll still come on and do your show. So that's just who Dan is. But that was one of my questions. I looked, and it looked like there was evidently the Justice Society comic book had just been launched by Geoff Johns. And that's evidently there's a little bit of thing, well, we can't use the Justice Society. And that's why they went with Justice Guild. Is that kind of what it was in your remembrance?
Well, it's more than that. And they love the script. They love the outline. They just went, wow, this is awesome, but we can't let you do it. Because, again, spoiler alert, I mean, if you haven't seen the show, what are you listening to this podcast for? So I think, that the idea that the Justice Guild had died in the Southern, the Justice Society had died, they were like, well, we can't introduce them in an animated series the first time anyone's going to see them and then say they were dead. We can't, we just can't do that. And then it was Levitz who kind of went, well, why don't you just sort of Watchmen the thing like Alan Moore did when they couldn't let him do the Charlton characters and he created the Watchmen as ciphers for them. So why don't we just have ciphers for characters? And what it ended up doing was not only creating a cipher for the Justice Society, but it also played in a more innocent time. They almost feel like Super Friends.
Yes.
So for people who weren't familiar with the Justice Guild, they're like, okay, we're watching a parody of the Super Friends. And it worked on that level too. So it worked out great, except for how hard it was to name the characters. We knew who we wanted, but we didn't know, like, because every time it was like, oh, the Scarlet Speedster. No, because that's the Flash's name. The Green, the Emerald Guard. No, you can't Emerald. You can't do Emerald. You can't do this. You can't. Oh, my gosh. And so every name was so hard to come up with. And because Black Canary has her vocal power thing, her, you know, voice, the siren. So Black Siren, yes, boom, easy. We got that one. Okay, now we have to get the rest.
And then on Arrow, they went on to have the actress's name is now escaping me, who played in the parallel world was Black Siren. In the Arrowverse, which I thought was amazing. I'm like, oh my gosh, I wonder if that's an homage to this episode, which was really cool.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Oh, that's so cool.
And Jennifer, did you know they made through Mattel exclusive, had a four pack that they exclusively made a Black Siren, a Tom Turbine, a Green Guardsman, and a Streak figure?
I did not know that. Does she have a tray of cookies in her hand?
She does not, unfortunately. That would have been the perfect accessory, actually. But I was like, so I've got a bunch of stuff. If I ever meet you, Jennifer, I'm going to be with you for about an hour as you sign all of my things. But
I will sign. I will sign.
I didn't know someone had ever brought one of those to you at a convention and said, would you sign my Black Siren figure?
Yeah, I would totally do it after checking IMDb to make sure that I was, in fact, signing the correct thing. We all have those moments, right? Yeah, I love that she can, fight crime, bake cookies, but not speak up in a meeting. Yeah.
Well, that's not her. That's her era. Well, yes. Dan, it's interesting to hear the real, because I'd heard that story at the time that, well, we wanted this to be the Justice Society, but they wouldn't let us use the Justice Society. I didn't realize it was because of what was going on with the Justice Society at the time in the comic world. I thought it was because it was too realistic, version. It's like, well, that's what these people would have acted like and talked like,
oh yeah,
40s and 50s.
Couple of those lines, I was like, what did you just say?
Yeah.
Like, oh, here, all the women will be in the kitchen.
Yes, you know? And you're a credit to your people.
Yes.
What? Mm-hmm. What just came out of your mouth? I was like, oh my God.
I know.
Well, goodness. Actually, none of the superheroes in the 40s or 50s said that because there wasn't anybody back then who was a credit.
Right.
That wasn't until the 60s.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But so no one could see. Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. I loved Maria. I loved Hawk Girl's pushback with all of that. I loved it. I mean, so funny. And you and Maria, Phil and you and, you know, Hawk Girl having those, just do it. Just do it.
Right.
You know, it was just, I loved it. And it just further developed your dynamic with Hawk Girl.
Yeah.
You see every episode that we're watching, that relationship gets deeper and deeper between Hawkgirl and Green Lantern. And I just love how that played out. I mean, Wonder Woman and Batman had their very few moments, but with Green Lantern and Hawkgirl, it was a fully developed arc that you just see from beginning to end. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
That was such a rarity in cartoons back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about that, Phil. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like how, like, did you know, did you feel when you were doing that? Like, wow, this is really unique.
Well,
you're playing it.
Not really, because it felt just like, you know, working on an hour drama,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it wasn't just the character's face was all of these characters had depth, personality, you know, vibes. Just, I mean, they were fully created characters,
mm-hmm.
like you had in good movies, good theater, even back then. But most Saturday morning cartoons were not, you know, made that well, Dan.
I remember. I worked on some of those.
Nothing personal.
No, I did. It's just like that's a history. That's what the business was. You know, yep. Saturday morning, just like they're pushing cereal and toys,
right?
You know,
yeah. I remember working on an old cartoon, and the director's thing was, remember, end all of your lines up. That gives it energy for the kids.
Oh God,
I'm sorry, your dog died. No, up. Sorry, your dog died.
I have the model from that show of your character. I just found it like cleaning my garage, moving boxes around. I'm like, oh, look, I have the model pack from Mr. T. There's Woody. Oh,
that's so cool. When
you still have that.
Yeah. I mean, I stepped into animation in the mid-90s, and it was right when this piece of animation kind of took that turn into these fully fleshed out dimensional characters. And I was like, oh, I love this kind. I think that's what led me to games eventually, is because like, I love this stuff. I love the full picture. I mean, I can do your dun 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 when you want me to, but you know, I really love this stuff. The real life. I'm like, yeah, real life, real stories. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I was talking to Dave Hayter, who's a voice actor as well and a really brilliant writer. And it was his birthday, actually, years and years ago. I gave him a book of comic book art for his birthday, and he opens it up and he starts looking through it, and he said, you know, this is our modern mythology. We don't study the Greeks anymore, and we don't talk about them, but we talk about this stuff, and this is our modern mythology. And I was like, wow, yeah, totally. People need to find themselves.
That's one of the things that Warner Brothers did when they started this with Batman, the animated series, and Superman, the animated series, and the whole Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Andrea Romano, who were all there at the beginning to kind of form this. And it just took off from there. We got Static Shock. We got all these hard hitting that were emotionally impactful, meaningful characters, Batman Beyond, and Justice League, especially Justice League Unlimited, just leaned into that heavily. And I think that's one of the reasons that the five of us are here talking about it, and we've got so many fans of the show to this day who are watching it with their kids now, which is incredible.
And this episode in particular really speaks to that whole idea of the mythology, because these characters are, you know, they're comic book characters come to life, and yet, you know, it's like you get the real life comic book characters interacting with their heroes, and it's really, really cool. It's really powerful, because at first, you know, they're kind of a joke, and by the end of the episode, when they sacrifice themselves, you get really choked up.
Oh,
it's really powerful.
Absolutely.
I came across a video online when I live in Canada now, and I was finding this episode to refresh myself was a searching event. And in that searching, I came across a guy online. I can't remember his name, but he was talking about this episode, and then he was talking about cartoons in general. And he shared a story of growing up, and he followed rules so hard that it was a problem. And his parents were trying to get him to think in the gray areas, and they couldn't get him to stop following rules to the point where it was problematic. And it wasn't working. Nothing they did was helping. And then he saw an episode, I think it was Justice League, Public Enemy, where Lex Luthor is president. And so following the rules in that case was quite destructive. And that's the only thing that finally got through to him and helped him understand, like, oh, I have to look deeper. I have to, and I think about that as a parent. I'm like, oh my God, I would be so grateful if a show could come along and hand my kids some of these lessons that I'm not able to get in there yet. You know, it just was beautiful because it changed his life. It changed the way he was able to think about himself in the world and interpersonal relationships and decisions. And I was like, whoa, what we do is cool.
It is. No, so this episode, I mean, I got very teary-eyed. I mean, it starts out like, oh, this is, and there are so many layers to this episode, you know, and there's something like you said, you know, it starts out and it's just like, oh gosh, look how dated that group is. And then as you move on through the episode, and especially with Green Lantern's character being so invested and what it meant to him, that touched me so deeply. I mean, I will admit it. I got teary-eyed at the end. I was like really weepy. So, I mean, I don't want to do spoilers, but, you know, I thought it was very heavy that they showed them the graves. I thought that was really dark and very serious. And I wonder, was there any discussion about that? And because it's a cartoon after all, was there any discussion about the graves and the, you know, the,
no,
you know, the darkness of it?
Well, no, but yeah, but no, but okay. But one of the aspects, I have to say, there is a legal aspect to it, that a DC kind of thing. It wasn't like the scene is there because of an edict, but it helped us in a way. Because there is a Catman who is a villain that DC owns, but there was also a Catman that was a hero character that was, you know, and it may be in public domain and it may not be, and who knows what, but because DC owns a guy named Catman, we had to put his name, that character who is technically a villain in the comics, but we put his name on that grave so that they could legally protect themselves and say, no, we're not, even though it's supposed to be a cipher for Wildcat. But it was, you know, we didn't have to, it was best not to make up a name, just use the name that they owned already. Mm-hmm. And so that made it, but that has nothing to do with the power. No, they didn't mind. Graves, you know, for telling that story, but that's also the reason why they are the Justice Guild and not the Justice Society.
Right. Right.
That scene is the reason, you know, that if we hadn't had that, and if they hadn't been dead, you know, that was, we would have been able to use those characters, but it wouldn't have been the same story. So.
And I saw a note about, speaking of names, I saw a note when I was doing my research that the kid's name, who is like the, you know, the Snapper Carr, the Rick Jones stand-in, Ray Thompson, was, if I'm not mistaken, it was Bruce Timm who did it as an homage to Roy Thomas, who was obviously did All-Star Squadron and everything like that. And right. Also to Ray Bradbury, the science fiction author.
I saw that too. Right. I saw that also. Yeah.
And yeah. That's absolutely the case, because he was the perfect little, you know, the sidekick that all the groups always had back then, and so that he was the cipher for that, and Roy Thomas was the guy that was like such a big 40s comic fan that he always tried to push that stuff into his comics, and what's weird is that the plot is sort of based loosely on how he did the end of the Kree-Skrull War, where Rick Jones uses the Supreme Intelligence to project all the heroes and save the day at the, and so there was a little bit of that. But also, it turns out that he got that from Gardner Fox, because that was Gardner Fox. That was his idea for how to bring the Justice Society back into, and we didn't know that. I found that later on he just marvelized this idea that it was originally going to be for DC. And so we just brought it back. We just brought it home. And ironically, we didn't even know that when we did the episode. And it was dedicated to Gardner Fox because he was the one that did the whole crossover thing and brought back the Justice Society and all that. He you know, and he worked in the 40s as well and created,
Yeah, co-creator of a lot of those characters. Yeah, Justice Society and Justice League. But then talking about the emotions of this episode, I was already getting a little teary-eyed. And then it flashes up on the screen in loving memory. This episode is dedicated. I was like, oh, my gosh. And just hit me even harder. It was so.
And I love that they named the Neil Patrick Harris character after Roy Thomas, who was a fanboy that became an amazing creator. Exactly. Just like this character.
Just like this character. Exactly. And he was so wonderful because he had that, you know, that young Doogie Howser voice.
Yes.
And
yes.
He was able to turn it into like, it was awesome. It was great.
Yeah, yes, I mean, that's so something. I mean, that John Stewart was a fan of the, heroes around him was sort of a metaphor because that's how I felt in the booth.
Right.
Because of the cast, all the guest cast that we had.
No.
I mean, there were so many, iconic on-camera actors. I mean, Neil Patrick Harris, Michael McKean, William Catt?
William Catt?
No.
Edward Norton?
It's like, oh my gosh, he's the only one of us playing a hero in here who's worn a suit.
Exactly. Right.
This was this is one of the first Justice League episodes before we get to Unlimited where the cast was just, oh my gosh. And I feel so bad because I'm looking, I'm like, oh, Susan's not doesn't get to play this day. When it had all these other people, and Susan doesn't get to be there. I was like, oh.
I know. And Batman's barely there. I mean, yeah, but it was, I just so enjoyed it because I don't remember seeing this episode and talk about revisiting. I mean, it was what, or maybe just visiting because I don't even know if I saw it originally. But man, was it was such a treat to see everybody. In all their glory. And also, like, because I'd seen Jennifer in other things, it was so fun to see her in this part and to hear her voice, that high-pitched, she perfectly captured that era. Vocally, she perfectly captured it. And Dan, your direction and the storyboarding on this.
The storyboarding was phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
It really was
great. I think we have said that for, James and I have said that for every episode we've done this for, that you just hats off to the storyboard.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Van Wyk, Joaquin Dos Santos, just Brett Blevins, they all knocked it out of the park. They did such a wonderful job. There's that one shot when the truck, the milk truck drives past and the camera rotates past it and it's animating in perspective and the guy's kind of looking at that and it's like, wow, that is so well done. And, it's a gamble. You never know if that kind of thing is going to work or not. And it really did. It was, and it's such a simple thing, but it just was really effective.
We've got a couple questions on the Twitter field here that have come in because we mentioned we're going to have everyone on the show today. Our first question is from, and I apologize by mispronouncing this, Majin Tenshi on Twitter says, "Hello, Jennifer. Thank you for being part of this amazing show. Can you share some inside stories that took place between you and Andrea, or if you had a moment with any of the other cast members during the recording of this particular two-parter?"
During this episode?
You have to really go back far. Well,
that requires a level of recall that this particular goldfish doesn't have. But I will tell you, first of all, thank you for the question. Thank you so much for watching and being out there. I will tell you that just to hear this episode back made my heart so happy because it took me back into being in those rooms with all you guys and torturing Phil with my shoe choices. And I have a penchant for really obnoxious shoes, and Phil was like, what, why are you wearing those? He was offended by my shoe choice because we were doing some behind the scenes stuff, and Phil comes in, he's like, what? No, just no. I mean, these boots are big and hairy and long. They look like he cut off a Yeti's feet and stuck them on my feet. And then I walked into the room. Things like that stay with me. And like you guys were just talking about, like, the brilliance of the cast. And for me, it was everybody in that room. Everybody in that room. Every time I walk in those rooms, it blows my mind. The genius of this group of people.
It really does. It's, man.
Yeah. It leaves me speechless. I'm like, wow, one day I'm going to be like you. Cool. This is awesome. Yeah. Well, I mean,
and that's why we're still talking about it. I mean, that's why, you know, the fans are still out there and showing it to their children. And, you know, we get it all the time that people are still referring to the show or talking about the show, are still referencing the show because it made such a huge impact. And you have all these creative people, the writers, directors, the storyboard artists, the musicians. I mean, you have, yeah, you know,
really, well, and then amazing.
The actors, the guest stars, Andrea Romano, you know, just orchestrating all of us.
It's all, you know, amazing, amazing.
Yep.
It used to blow my mind because honestly, you know, I think you were asking, the person asking was asking about sort of some behind the scenes feel. And one of the things that always cracked me up is these rooms full of actors are like kindergarten classrooms gone amok. Like we're in there like between takes. And it is a special talent to be a voice director who can come in there and with one look or one word, whoosh, we all fall silent. And we were eyes trained on her. Yes, ma'am. What do we do now, ma'am?
A hand up in the air and just like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like conducting. It's so cool. I love that with Walla too.
I hear a crowd, I watch a crowd scene for us. I think, oh, I remember that so well. You know, just being, you know, having to do all those background scenes and whether it's a woman walking along or falling from a building or a crowd scene. I just remember her orchestrating us. Yeah.
She was so clear. That's one of the greatest things about her. She was so clear about what she wanted because at that job, I think it's one of the great, aside from writers, one of the great unsung jobs of this industry, because she has to take a room full of people essentially sitting behind her and all of their input that they've spent months and sometimes years on, filter it through everything they're saying, and then just with a sentence or two, if that much, communicate to each of us in the booth what's required. And she is masterful at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have another question from for Jennifer from @girlwithcello on Twitter. Says, I love that you got to play multiple characters on the show. What were your inspirations for creating the voices for Killer Frost, Satana, Black Siren, whoever it may be during the recording sessions? Are you a person who looks at the visual of this is what the character looks like? Do you rely on the voice director like Andrea? How did you find those voices for those different characters?
You asked about my inspiration. It was separate them as much as possible and make sure Andrea's happy. Please God, make sure Andrea's happy. Yeah. You know, I would just go, I got my first animated job before I'd ever even seen really cartoons. So I jumped into classes early on and I believe in training. I still train. And I went to specific classes and teachers to learn how to create different sounding voices because people kept asking me to do women between 20 and 40 who were of the same nationality and general origin. So separating those voices was a big deal. For that, I always come, it's the writing for me. The writing is everything. Everything's in the writing. It is all there. That writer poured their entire creativity into that. And I'm always just in awe of it. And so I would find it in the writing and in the art. I loved when I got a visual because then I could tag onto something. And I love opposites, like Giganta is so big, but she still sounds like this, you know, I love marrying those two funny, crazy things.
And we have
Dan, you're smiling a very big smile right now.
No, sweet. It's so cool. Yeah, I know. It's nothing to say, nothing to add. Just yes.
@Frykowski_J on Twitter says, no question for Jennifer. Just really love her and her work. A declaration of how awesome she is. So that was one of our other compliments. We had a question. I'm trying to find it here for Dan Reba. Where'd it go? Sorry, I'm scrolling and I lost my place here. I know I can't find the name of the person who asked. Oh, here it is. It's @Joshua Van Dyne. Wanted to know, Dan, if you were given the opportunity to direct something with the actual Justice Society, would you take that opportunity? Is there any particular story you'd like to tell?
Oh dear. Well, I love those original characters. I'm a big fan, but I can't think of a specific Justice Society story per se. I mean, I was a big fan of the All-Star stuff when Wally Wood and Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz were writing. And that's when Power Girl like was introduced in that era. You know, that was kind of like, you know, I love the old stuff, though. So I'm like, because I really did really love that that era of the Justice Society as well. So I might lean towards that that kind of thing because that was pretty cool.
And at the underscore real REEL world said this is one of their favorite episodes of the entire series. They want to know how the writers came up with the Justice Guild, which we've now addressed. They also want to know if Jen was surprised when you read the script.
You know, I've been around the block for a minute or two. It was simply descriptive of my life as a woman. I will say one thing. It's hard to remember that far back specifically. I really appreciate the question, though, because it indicates such a love for the work that we did. And I think that's so cool. I love these darn scripts. I just love them. I loved because we used to get the physical scripts and they'd come with a thunk on your doorstep at some time of the evening. And as soon as it came, you'd run out. And if you were lucky, you had the storyboard, too. And you'd sit down with the script and the storyboard. And I used to dive into the descriptions in between because I love action, you know, and draw my little lines. Like, where can I weave the action in? And like just the whole joy of getting to read this stuff and getting to read it ahead of time was so, so cool.
And looking at the episode too, one thing that struck me is we had dynamic music partners. We had 2/3 of dynamic. We had Chris and Michael on a couple of episodes ago to talk about the music of the series overall. And Susan, I'm sure because we were so aware of it now, you noticed that the very final scene after there's the huge battle, when the Justice Guild realize, hey, the problem isn't really this robot. We have to go save John Stewart. There's that heroic surge. And then the swell, and it drops when they go away. And oh my gosh, I was so impacted and moved by that immediate change in the music tone. And oh, I got chills listening to it.
100%. And I thought of you, and I thought of our discussion with them, because the music brings so much to this episode. It is just, I mean, there's just, it's everything coming together. Everything coming together. They're just geniuses.
They really are.
They really are.
You have to get Lolita on the show, too.
Yes, we will. She was out of the country when we interviewed them. So she will come on. But it was just perfection, that music cue.
I'm often wondering, Phil, because, you know, you've been in a lot of these episodes and we see John's progression. There's so many episodes that I personally think of. This is a John Stewart episode. This is a John Stewart. But are there, for you, where would you rank Legends as far as your, whether it was an experience in the booth or just a favorite looking back on the episode being, wow, what a solid episode. Where would you rank this in the order of your favorite episodes?
Well, I mean, it is a really significant episode to me on a couple of levels. One, because it drew a connection between me and my character. We're both comic book fanboys. But also, it added a layer of background to the characters. Like, because that, you know, what a superhero did in their childhood, other than Batman, is never, ever, you know, told. So that helped me. It's like, okay, good. I know what that layer of his personality is going forward.
Yeah, just another one of those. I mean, you see the building blocks for all these characters, and that's one of the things I love the directors and the writers of the show, because they did take that time episode by episode. You get a little more built upon, because we already know a lot, like Phil just said, Superman and Batman, we know, but you're getting more background on Jon Stewart. You're seeing more of Jean's humanity throughout the episode. It is incredible.
And if I might add, a visual aspect of Jon's powers that altered because of this show. Bruce had an edict that he didn't want to have any silly giant hands or, you know, oven mitts they in the comics, Green Lantern would make things and would catch people. He's like, no, it's a shield. It's an orb. It's a force field. It's a, you know, whatever, but we're not going to do the silly stuff. And then when we did it for the Green Guardsman, because that was the point, the contrast between the two,
right.
And so it was so much fun that we realized we kind of like, why are we limiting ourselves? And there was, you know, we didn't go crazy. We didn't giant scissors or stuff, but he had a little more, we had a little bit more play later on as the season progressed to play with those powers more. Cause Green Lantern, you know, was a fan of Green Guardsman. You know?
And also
he was exposed to it.
So it made sense. And before, just him doing a blast of green and, you know, or an orb made sense because he was a Marine.
Exactly. It's all business. It's all like, what is the most effective thing to how to use this power? And that was, you know.
Yeah. Marines don't twirl their guns.
Exactly.
Are you sure?
That's one of the things I had to kind of separate the comic book John Stewart from, because in the comic books, John Stewart, he was in the Marines, but now he's an architect. And that's one of the things in the comic books, he would always create these elaborate things and creations, just much like Kyle Rayner, who was the artist, would do. And I love that symmetry between John and Kyle. They always had the more elaborate creations. That's one of the things I always kind of scratch my head about in Justice League. I'm like, why isn't he making like a starship or something out of his ring? So that answers that question. Thank you, Dan.
Damn.
I feel like I've been doing all the talking. That's why I'm pausing, because I feel like I'm doing all the talking and I don't want to.
It's perfect. It's perfect because I just defer to you on episodes like this, because when I was watching it, I just thought, wow, I'm in over my head.
Susan texted me, said, this is the geekiest episode yet.
It really is. I just felt like I was drowning in geek, and I just, I was like trying to get my way up to the surface because I had so many questions about it. So thank you for taking the lead on this one. I'll take the lead on the next one.
Okay,
I don't
perfect.
Even know what the next one is, but I'll take the lead on it.
And I do want to mention again, because we touched on the incredible cast, David Naughton as the Streak, William Catt as Green Guardsman, Steven Root, for crying out loud, as Catman, which there's nothing that man can't do. Ted McGinley, I knew him from The Love Boat, as Ace, the photographer. Tom Turbine, obviously, we have Jennifer Hale with us right now, Black Siren. Neil Patrick Harris as Ray Thompson. Udo, I can't read
Udo
my own writing.
Kier,
thank God. It looked like Keith. I'm like, that's not right. Udo Kier as Music Master, who was a stand-in for the Golden Age Fiddler. Mm-hmm. Michael McKean as Sportsmaster, who, Sportsmaster, the name didn't need to be changed, I guess, Dan?
I thought there was a subtle change, but I guess not. I guess we just went with it. The villains weren't quite as,
important or
I guess.
Copywriter.
Sure. maybe we forgot to change that one.
Corey Burton as Dr. Blizzard and Jeffrey Jones as Sir Swami. But I loved, because I was a big fan of the Stargirl series on DC Universe, then switched to CW, and they had Icicle, they had Fiddler, they had all those characters in that, and seeing them in live action and then going back and rewatching this episode was like, oh, it's just brilliant.
Have we done an episode like this nowadays, like on a streamer, they would have spun it off. It's like, okay, now we're doing a new series, Geek World Justice League. I
know. Yes, indeed.
The Cookies. Icicle gets his own series. Or a Ray Thompson prequel. It's Neil Patrick Harris, and we get the whole backstories from the 40s. But
Black Siren's Bakery. Mm-hmm.
That was going to be my question, Jennifer. You got interrupted. You did not get to make dessert. What were you and Hawkgirl going to make for dessert?
Oh, you know, we might have had a glass of wine, honestly. We would be drinking our dessert, I think.
That's that line, too, when they first show up. I loved it because I wrote it down because it was so funny, where you say, let's let the men talk, and Hawkgirl looks around. They can talk right here. Just the Maria's delivery of that line back. It's like, what are you talking about? That was so much fun.
So funny.
It was hard not to laugh at the record for that, because that was very, very funny.
Yeah.
And I noticed that in the beginning of the episode, George does get electrocuted. So
yes, he does.
I think we're consistent.
Absolutely.
With George getting electrocuted in every episode he ever did.
pretty much.
Poor George.
Oh, it's funny too. We designed that robot in the beginning to look as much like an anime Evangelion kind of thing. I mean, very much. So it would contrast with the goofy 50s robot sort of tin toy looking thing that menaced them in the with the Justice Guild. So it had to be Nice contrast.
Nice symmetry. Very cool. And I thought, too, is it kind of threw back to the Super Friends episode of Galactic Guardians where Lex Luthor is doing a giant spider robot that he's attacking Superman and Firestorm and Cyborg with. And I was like, oh, so he just, Lex Luthor has this whole army of robots that he just kind of walks around in and sends on the Justice. So I thought it might have been a little homage to Super Friends as well.
Yes. Yeah. And
this is when you, Dan, this is when you say, sure.
Of course.
Sure. But I
was watching again and I realized that we kind of played him like Blofeld. We played Lex sort of like, you know, they just like hands are like, you know, like Inspector Gadget, you know, it's just like, you're just seeing body parts and he's, you know, and I realized, oh, I think because we didn't have Clancy, he'd had no dialogue. We just wanted to like, and if we had really like shown him up too much, it would have like called attention to the fact that he doesn't speak. So we just kind of like, Blofeld him a little bit.
It was very for your eyes only when you only see, you know, the back of him in the wheelchair controlling the helicopter cat, that Bond gets into. Yeah, that was very.
Yeah, yeah, he needed a cat, but, you know, we're not going to go full Inspector Gadget. You know?
I'm curious, Jennifer, when you go back and you rewatch these and when you're playing a part in a series like this that has such longevity and there's more episodes going on, do you often find yourself not necessarily going back to rewatch the stuff you've been in, but you're like, oh, this particular series, I wonder, did you watch like all of Justice League Unlimited, not just the episodes you were in? Do you keep up with series and projects after you leave them?
That assumes a level of free time I do not have.
I understand.
But whenever I get a chance to, I do. And I love that things like this podcast give me the space where I have to. But like, I really want to show up like fully like remembering all of that. So I don't often rewatch my work. I don't have time. But when I do, it was literally like being transported back into the room. Mm-hmm. It was like I was actually there with everybody. And it just made my heart so happy. I have so much love and respect for every single person I've worked with. Just like, I wish I could tell people, I love, there are a couple of illusions that are out there that get repeated a lot. One is that we get to pick the jobs we do. You know, we're workaday people, most of us voice actors, and we're happy to have work and we hope we get work and we don't really get to drive the bus. We show up and get on the bus and do the part that our bus seat does, mm-hmm. you know? And the other one is this, I don't think people realize how wonderful the people in this community are. They're just brilliantly talented and such fun human beings and truly like normal, delightful people to be around. So rewatching really took me back there. And that was a joy.
So you're saying you're going to come back on when we start getting into Giganta and the Justice League Unlimited?
Absolutely. I'm going to keep the door down. Give me in here.
Well done, James.
Thank you. We have her on tape now, Susan. She can't say no.
I know. Well, that was good. Good.
Well, as we wrap this up here, I find myself always just pinching myself that, A, I'm getting to talk with all of you who, you know, your work meant so much to me growing up and being able to see it. But then the fact that, you know, we're all talking about the show and that there's so much love out there for Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And as I said earlier, just it's a testament to the staying power of this because of the writing, because of the acting, because of the voice directing, the art on this series. So thank you, all of you, all four of you, for making this very a happy experience for me.
That's so sweet. That's like, it's all of a sudden you're in the episode. You know, you're like the comic book fan.
My head is abnormally large for my body. I could play a live action Ray Thompson if we ever go to live action. It's very disproportionate to my body.
You know, Kat, duly noted, James. You
know, one thing that stands out to me that I don't know if I don't get to talk about enough, I think of Dan and I think of everybody in those rooms, like all of you guys, all the writers. I used to just look at you guys when I would, because typically we'd pass from the outer chamber through the recording, you know, the actual main booth with all the gear. For people who don't know it, there's like the recording console and a bunch of chairs slightly elevated up behind, and you pass through there. You don't hang out in there. And then you go into the little fishbowl that has the glass in front of it and all the chairs. And when I would pass through that center chamber, you know, all the writers are in there and Andrea's in there and the engineer's in there. And I'd just be like, hi, I love you guys. Hi. But I didn't want to bug you. I just adore what you guys do. You make everything possible for us.
Well, yeah. And that's one of the things I mentioned about doing this podcast is it gave me the opportunity to talk to the writers and directors in a way that I wasn't able to do during the show. You know, I mean, it wasn't like we were sitting around talking to Dwayne McDuffie about a script and how it was going to break down and what my character was going to do in this episode, or Dan Reba or Stan Berkowitz. You know, we didn't have that. But so now we do get to have some of those conversations, and it feels like a complete and total gift. I have mentioned that over and over and over again. You know, the actors I do Comic Cons with, we talk, we've heard each other's stories. But like Phil, hearing some of his stories, he was a guest on, I think, on our first episode or one of our first episodes.
I think the second podcast. Episode, I think, yeah, we had him on for Blackest
Night.
And
I heard him tell stories I'd never heard before. And that also felt like such a gift, because I'm not used to asking Phil questions and, you know, having him share these stories. So this podcast, it's just been like James and I pinch ourselves. We just feel so grateful that we get to have these conversations all the time. It's wonderful.
It's yes, so and, cool.
And yeah. Jen, you're putting forth the gratitude towards Dan is so important. I mean, I mentioned this to, you know, fans at cons, that as voice actors, I mean, we're sort of like the lead singers in a rock band. We're the people up front.
Yes, yes.
But we are not the whole band. Mm-hmm. And these characters would not exist with just the voice. We need the writing and the art. Mm-hmm. The voice, the writing, and the art coming together, that's what makes the characters exist.
Yes, so much. And thank you guys for putting together this podcast so we can come in here and do this.
And just to jump on the Dan bandwagon, like there's so much that happens with Wonder Woman or Green Lantern or Hawkgirl. And I'll look at the screen and I'm like, I love that expression. I love the way she looks right now, or that the sweetness that's passing between those two characters non-verbally. And we have, as the actors, have nothing to do with that. That is just how they are being drawn and how they are expressing themselves visually. And it's beautiful, beautiful.
And I get to take credit for the work of some fantastic storyboard artists and animators overseas and designers. You know, my name gets put up front, but the reality is it takes a village. You know, it really does. There are so many people, because in this show in particular, the character designs back and forth, and Bruce and Glenn and all sorts of James doing all these. It was so difficult to get this stuff together, because we also had to go through an approval process with DC. So once we got their visuals down, their names took forever to get through legal, and then the ending with the world destroyed. We had just gone through 9/11, and we didn't want to reflect on anything that looked real. So when that robot gets destroyed, we wanted to make that destruction look fantastic and science fiction-y and not remotely resembling Ground Zero. And when that world is destroyed at the end, we didn't want to make it look like a real atomic holocaust. We kind of made it look sort of like a 50s tabletop wax models melting. We wanted to give it a sort of a melted kind of fantastic look, because we were too used to seeing real horror on television, and we didn't really want to reflect that. It's emotional enough. The story content is enough. We don't really need to really go there and make it super realistic. We just suggest it and make it, you know, fantastic. So it was a tough show. It was a really tough show. There's a lot of balancing. And so many people worked so hard to get that across.
And you managing all of those talented people's work and putting it together into this great episode. Thank you.
Bravo. Bravo.
Thank you.
This is the part I love. My favorite part of the show. We embarrass Dan Reba. I love it.
I know, he's a behind the scenes guy. They're not used to this. You'll be
no,
okay.
I know.
Just breathe.
I just feel guilty, because I really, honestly, it's so many. It's like Bruce and James and Glenn and so many people, and the designers are phenomenal, and board guys are great. So it's like I'm just lucky enough to just sort of be the final, you know, out the door kind of guy that's checking everything and putting it all together. It's a huge collaboration. I'm just so, so blessed to be a part of it. So,
well, we're blessed to have you on the show, and Phil, thank you both. I mean, we're going to keep Jennifer here for at least another hour to talk about her career. I'm kidding. That was a joke. But Phil Lamar and Dan Reba, thank you so much for being here. I mean, it came together so quickly. And we just, this is what I said to James. I texted James earlier and I said, I love the idea of people just dropping by. Like, we're just like, they can just swing by. When's it happening? 1 o'clock. Okay, I'll be there. So thank you for both just hopping on and just being a part of this wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, exactly.
Susan, this is so cool. I love this so much. It's so fun to see everybody and to hear everybody. Oh my God.
It's joyful. It's just joyful.
That's the right word. It's the perfect word. Yep.
So you've got an incredible career. You've done so many projects. And as I alluded to earlier, so many different voices and all these fantastic, you must pinch yourself with all the different stuff you get to do.
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. I feel incredibly lucky. I think every one of us in this career feels very lucky. And everyone I know, I have such great respect because everybody works very hard for their luck. And I'm just keeping up with the people around me. They're amazing.
Well, I'm just so curious about your thoughts. I'd want to hear your thoughts about the industry itself. And because you've worked so steadily and so long, and you're so deeply respected within the industry, Jennifer, you know, James, you may not know this, but among her peers, she's so deeply respected. And there's not anyone who's going to say anything but wonderful things about Jennifer Hale. I'd love to get your opinion about how you've seen the industry change from when you started, and even in the last few years, how dramatic it's been with COVID. What are the things that stand out to you in terms of your life and how you're working these days?
Yeah, the whole world has changed so much. I feel like we've all lived 10, 12, 30, 40 lifetimes in our lifetime. Things are changing so fast, and it's not slowing down anytime soon. I think I came in the mid-90s, my first series, I booked it in 93, it aired in 94, when things were just beginning to shift. And it really was this group of like an acting troupe. You had this kind of group of actors, and this is what they did. And then as the world got bigger, got faster, and more access was granted through the internet and all that to what it is we do and how we do it, and fans having access to us more, and kind of people seeing inside of it, people got curious. And I've seen many more people come in. I think that animation has evolved so much. I can only speak to the piece that I've been in, like the last, oh my God, like the last 30 years. And it's changed a lot. The style of it has kind of gone closer toward film and TV. And now that games have come in, games really went a lot that way. Games are informing everything. Everything is in this new world. Acting styles have changed hugely. Hugely. It used to be that more presentational style acting was what you did in the serious shows. You know, nowadays it's like a film. It's like the camera's, you know, a foot away from your face. So don't overact, because now we're in that place where thought registers on the mic. And the writing is evolving around that. And the visuals, I don't think we can begin to understand the impact that the changes in visuals have had on us as voice actors. Like, everything's getting more realistic, hyper-realistic, and everything's getting much closer to the hip. And we're also seeing this huge change toward representation. The whole world has awakened to the fact that those in power aren't the only people who exist. And all peoples, there's a push to represent all peoples and to represent them authentically. You know, 5-10 years ago, I would audition with dialects all the time, like, no problem. Mm-hmm. Now I don't. Unless it's science fiction, where you can create this crazy mishmash dialect, which I absolutely love doing, because I love working in other languages because I hear them in my head all the time. I really do hear.
There's people in my head. Podcast.
Yeah,
that's
I know, right?
Podcast,
Jen. I know. I'm not a British person in my head since I was a child. And that's why I work as a Brit so much. But now, I mean, I played a trans character in a game several years ago. I would never do that today. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm my heritage. I'm a First Nations person, indigenous, what you call in the U.S. a Native American ancestry. So that opens up like that piece of my world. But I don't stray outside of that and my, you know, my your white European ancestry very often, unless it's science fiction, part of why I love science fiction. So representation has come here. Access is crazy. You can do this job from anywhere. It's so cool. It's opened up a ton of doors, and it has also increased isolation, which is really hard and really, I think, dangerous sometimes, because we can get in our own heads and stop having a good time and forget that we do this because we love it. You know, you can do it from anywhere, but you also have to have a bit more technical knowledge. I remember when the pandemic hit, I think it was Erin Fitzgerald and I were talking, and there were people who were asking us to work and to engineer because we couldn't be in the room with an engineer. And she made such a good point. It was, I am not putting an engineer out of work. And I went, oh my God, I didn't even think of that. So I took a stand back then, informed by that perspective that I hadn't even thought of, where I will not engineer. Number one, you don't want me to. I'm not very good at it. I'm terrible at it. You know, I'm the kind of person who'll be call an engineer and say, can we do a Zoom call where you take control of my computer? Because I don't even know what button you're talking about. You know, I can plug, I'll FaceTime you to make sure I'm plugging the right cord into the right thingy. That's about my chat, right?
I've never and related to anyone so much as I'm relating to you right now, Jennifer. That's the right? tech challenge right? as well. My gosh.
Oh my God. So we were required to be technically more proficient. And so then boundaries became a real issue. Like, oh, how do I advocate for myself here? Like, I suck at that. Don't make me do it, because I can't give you a good performance if my brain is on the engineering part. I just can't. My brain, my focus is split. That sucks. So it's complicated the heck out of things. It's opened a ton of doors. And we're in the middle, I believe, of a revolution, a cultural opportunity anyway, to take back our lives and our world and make them as we would like them to be, one tiny step at a time. Just one tiny step at a time. So yeah, I could talk about this all day, as you can see.
Well, and I love hearing your thoughts and your feelings about this. I mean, you are just so articulate about all of this. I want to ask, you left LA when COVID happened. How has that been in terms of your career? Do you feel like, because you can be anywhere now, it used to be you had to be in LA, New York, Chicago, maybe Boston, but now, and you can be all over the world, and you can, as long as you can do this and have a recording studio in your house, you can make it happen. Do you feel a difference personally in terms of being out of LA in terms of your career?
In terms of my career has stayed very much the same as it was. I'm very involved in a service to the industry site that I've put together. So that's taken a lot of my time. But I will say, for me personally, living somewhere that I find beautiful and restorative has made me just happier in general. And that makes me better at my work. Mm-hmm. And I was very aware, like I moved into a place, when I moved in the pandemic, I basically hit the eject button, and 72 hours later, I lived somewhere else. Because I just had a very strong intuition to get out. Mm-hmm. And I moved into a house that was a 1970s kind of Brady Bunch special. Ain't nothing in those walls keeping any sound from anywhere. And I had jobs that were in the middle of production. And so I had to make do. I was ripping carpet off the floor.
I remember it vividly. I followed all of it. I was right there. I just loved watching you do that.
Yeah. And my family just threw down. I'm very lucky. My brother-in-law is a tall, strong guy, and he and my sister have two tall, strong sons who were at the time mid to late teens, and they came in here and helped me rip down drywall and pack stuff up, and because nobody would come in and work because of the pandemic. And I found one guy, and I hooked him up with George Whittam, George the Tech, and they talked via FaceTime and stuff, and then he knew what materials to get. And I was always conscious the whole time, like, wow, I'm so grateful that I have the means to build a good studio. People out there who are learning, just to you guys, everybody spends a lot of time thinking about their mic and their console and their computer and stuff. The room around you is at least as important. Because if you sound like you're recording from the inside of a tin can, doesn't matter what kind of mic you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to talk a little bit about Skills Hub, which we could talk about it for the full hour, but I have watched this, you create this and nurture it, and I've watched it grow. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about Skills Hub and what made you decide to create it and how it's going, and just to tell the fans about it.
Thank you. Yes, I found myself many times in my career, because we're so isolated sometimes, right? We used to go into the office to audition, the office being our agent's office or the casting office, and we'd have feedback from another human being. And then things evolved And so we were doing that a lot less. And then they got slammed into, we're not doing it at all in the pandemic. And I found myself just wishing I could have 10 minutes with somebody I trust to get out of my own head and my auditions. But nobody books 10 minutes of coaching with you or 10 minutes of giving you feedback. And I mentioned this to my sister, and I was like, she's like, you know what? We're going to have a barbecue, and I'm going to invite my friend Bill. And I told Bill the idea. He's a really brilliant developer, and he designs user X experience, computer programs, the whole thing. And he's like, yeah. And so Skills Hub was born. And during the episode, the period of time where we'd beta test and invite people to come in and stuff, and we had new people coming in. And we realized, like, people want a place to go that's soup to nuts. Like, when I'm first starting out, it can help me. When I'm a veteran, it can help me. It's got a bunch of people I can choose from who I can trust. It's got classes, and we have a bunch of free stuff. We have these free workout rooms that people are loving. There's a workout room going all the time, and that's just a place where people get together, practice scripts, talk about the business, do this, do that. I've written out these specific things called paths that are step-by-step instruction, assembly, whatever, Lego instruction, assembly instructions mm-hmm. for a career. Like, when you haven't done anything, do this path we call foundations. You want to make some money in commercials? Do this path we call commercials. All right, you done building your skill? Okay, do the demo path. You know, and we now have 80-some coaches from all over the planet in all different aspects of specialty. It's acting.skillshub.life. Acting.skillshub.life, not .com, .life. I'm on there all the time doing, like, free stuff to help people, and I run a class there, and we got classes of all kinds now. We basically just listen to our members. We're going through a series right now where Bill's reached out to about a dozen members and gone just randomly, like, what do you need? What do you think of this? And then we build according to what is needed. And it's really coming together beautifully. It's a beautiful community. People are going like, wait, I remember one coach alone. He works in the games industry. And you can be a person who loves a project like this, and you can reach out and sit down with the person who starred in that project or the person who cast that project and ask them, like, how did you do that? How do I do that? You know, how do you decide who to cast? What can I do better? You can literally get straight to the people. And access is global access is one of our values, right? And I know this one voice director, I'm not going to name names. He's a voice director and a casting director. He's really passionate about giving back. And there are at least five actors he's worked with who live nowhere near Los Angeles, who all have Los Angeles agents. And one of them lives in Malaysia, you know, and they showed up and did the work. And he went, you know what? You need to be in the industry. Let's go. Mm. You know, that's not something we promise, but that's what comes from these long-term relationships. Mm. Yeah, I don't have a two-sentence elevator pitch, but it's a one-stop shop. No matter what your level, you can trust us. And we really are here to help people. Yeah. Thank you.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And I have watched you create it and nourish it. And like I said, and it is so, it speaks to your heart and your soul. And I just am a huge fan. Huge. I mean, you know this because I think we ran into each other once. I remember outside Elaine Craig's, who is a big casting director in the voiceover community. And I was going to New Zealand for my first time and for Comic-Con, and you had been and you had had the most extraordinary time, and you gave me a list of things to do. And to me, you were just the most fearless, courageous, talented person. And I have always held that all these years. Those are my feelings about you. And I'm just so thrilled that you came and spent this time with us and shared about Skills Hub and also other things. I had told James, I said, we have to do the interview with her, but we have to make sure we talk about Skills Hub because brava for this, because we are isolated. We do need direction. We lost that sense of direction when COVID hit. We used to be directed for not just for jobs, but for auditions. We would be directed, and we lost that.
Yeah.
And so you talk about the danger of isolation. You've been so vocal about that.
I've been through it. It sucks.
And it sucks.
There's a lot of great places out there to learn. I think one of the things that we offer, aside from the sort of step-by-step instruction thing and the free connection points, is community. We have amazing community. And so you're not alone.
Right.
You may feeling lonely or you may be feeling isolated, but you're not. We make sure people are we provide the space for people to connect. And our thing is all boats rise together, like link arms. Here we go. That's how
right.
We...
So James, now you see why she's, Captain Shepherd, right?
Right.
Now you see it. Now you've had this experience and I'm thrilled and delighted that you two have met because I think she, I can't wait for her to be on your radio show. And I can't wait for you to come back, frankly, on this podcast when we do your other characters.
Thank you. I want to acknowledge you both because this is so great. James, I love your deep knowledge of this lore and of the lore because I don't track it that way. My brain doesn't work like that. And I love when I'm around people who do. It's so cool because I like, yes, what you just said.
Yep.
It's so fun. And Susan, your heart, you're just one of my favorite people. You have such a beautiful heart and you see people. Like, that's a gift. People see people all the time, but you see people. And being seen is quite the experience. It's so moving. So I'm so grateful to be here.
Next step is I'm going to go sign up for Skills Hub because now it sold me. Your 2-cent pitch sold me. It's amazing. And that's one of the questions I've always seen voice actors get at panels is, how do I get into the business? So this is for those people. So I think I need to go around at conventions with a Skills Hub website shirt and just be like, yeah, here's, if you want to know, just start pointing to the shirt.
Skillshub.life. Skillshub.life. Yeah.
So that's how people get in touch with Skills Hub. And for people who want to get in touch with you, you're on social media.
Okay. I'm at jhalegram on Instagram, at jhaletweets on Twitter. I'm actually, one of the things that Skills Hub has done is we have the skillshub.life YouTube channel. And every week you'll have a new video up from myself or one of our coaches about things about voice acting and things about, and it also applies to the whole creative life because there's a lot of parallels. Because the thing we don't talk about enough, I don't think, is that we're entrepreneurs. We are sole business owners. Like, however you say that, but we're business owners and we got to show up, make the business happen every day. That's a whole separate skill set. So we're.
And you've always been drawn to that. I mean, for as long as I can remember, you have both. Well, a lot of people are one side or the other, right? They're the creative or the business. And you have always been drawn to both.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're so successful, frankly, because I think, to have the talent is one thing, but then to figure out how do I market my talent? How's the best way to put my talent out there and to get it seen and heard. You've always managed to do that. You've always found your way, even when you're like, okay, this is all new. How do I figure this out? And that's really a gift.
Thank you. I had kind of a weird background. My second dad used to call me the little capitalist piglet. My dad, he meant it with great love.
I'm sure.
But I was the kind of capitalist that would like figure out you could make money doing the macrame plant hanger creation. And then I'd do my budget out and I'd go buy the stuff. And then I'd finish it. When it was time to sell them, I'd be like, oh, just take it. It's fine. I'm that kind of capitalist. But, I went to a fine arts high school. And then I got a business degree in college. So I kind of had both going on. But when I think about it, we have this notion in our culture that you're either creative or you're good at business.
Right.
And I think that that is a cultural conversation that keeps a bunch of us trapped. I know a lot of, like, look at Will I Am, look at my friend Dave Hayter, look at so many smart, smart creative people. And they do both. Mm-hmm. Look at Jay-Z, God, look at all this. And I think that I'd like to take that conversation and smash it against the rocks because I want to live in a world where creative, artistic people are financially empowered so that they begin to be part of the power structure of the world and decisions are made from that place too.
Amen. That's all amen. And also then I promise we'll let you leave. Jen is also a musician. And she's a beautiful singer.
I saw the guitars hanging back there and I wanted to ask, but I,
because that's a part of your expression. That's a part of your creativity. And we're going to have you back because there's a lot we have to cover here. But I don't want to keep you. I know you have things you have to do. So we'll continue this, but she's also an amazing singer.
Thank you. Thanks so much, you guys. This was a joy. I can't wait to come back. I am absolutely in. And everybody out there, Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for watching and for giving us. Without you, we can't do this. So yeah. Thank you.
I'll be in touch soon, Jennifer. Thank you very much again for your time. It's a great pleasure
so
to
much,
meet you.
James. Susan, I love you. I'm so happy to be here with you. I can't wait. I can't wait to see you again. And I love that I get to walk away going, I get to do this again. So, thanks, you guys.
Right. Bye, Jen. Wait. Thank you.
Take care.
Have
thank
a
you.
Great day. Thanks, Jane.
Bye. So that was us with three guests. Tune in next week when we have Clancy Brown, George Newbern, Maria Canales Barrera, Phil Lamar, and Stan Berkowitz all join us for our roundtable discussion. No, I think we could just keep adding people. That'd be...
Don't tease, because people will think you're serious. No, and I know what the deal is. And I was like, really?
That
was so much fun.
Yes.
That was so much fun. I loved having the different perspectives. It's kind of, it's so entertaining to hear from all the different areas of the production. And Phil's point of view and Jennifer's point of view and then Dan Reba's and your point of view as a fan. And I mean, my God, you're so knowledgeable. And I don't know what the expression is. Hook my wagon. What is that? Is it,
hook my star, attach my, I think I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I have the right co-host is all I'm saying.
You hooked
so
your wagon
grateful.
To me. So I'm a horse's ass is what you're saying. Cause you just, hooked, that's a backhand.
I was trying to be subtle. But you're a geeky horse's ass and
Thank
I appreciate
you.
That. So
no, this was great because, and again, for those of you who are listening, this is just some behind the scenes baseball. This was supposed to be just Jennifer. And then as we were watching this, I was sitting down today to watch this and Susan texts me and says, Phil just texted me. It was about something similar related to Justice League. And he mentioned he watched this episode and I'm having Jennifer on. I'm like, oh, great. That's great. We'll have Phil. And as I'm watching it, I'm sitting there thinking, I'd love to ask Dan Reba about that because he directed the episode. Boy, I'd love to ask Dan Reba. I'm like, okay, I'll just ask and see if he can jump on. So literally 2.5 to 3 hours before we're about to go live, I messaged Dan on Facebook. He goes, yeah, my garage is leaking, but I could probably do. I'm like, no, don't. I know it's last minute. I'm really sorry to do this to you. He's like, no, this will be fun. And I said, well, Jennifer Hale's going to be on too. He's like, oh, okay. And then we didn't know we were going to have Phil until 10 minutes before when he confirmed back to me. I was like, oh, this is going to be amazing. So just serendipitously came together. So hopefully all of you who are listening got an unexpected treat having Phil on as well because we didn't tweet that out.
No, we didn't because it was such a surprise. But yeah, I love that. I love how it all came together. And there's just something so rewarding about hearing behind the scenes that we didn't know. And like we said during the podcast, it wasn't as if we were sitting around with Dan or Stan or Dwayne or, you know, any of Rich Fogel. We weren't. We didn't really have access to them like we do now. And it's it makes everything so much clearer when you have this whole picture. And that was so valuable. And that was such a treat.
Yeah.
I mean, Jennifer is a show unto herself. I mean, you've met her now. You've talked to her. You know how fabulous she is. So she is a standalone episode on, you know, anytime.
Easily.
But because she didn't have a huge part in this episode, it was okay. And when she's, you know, has a bigger part, she'll definitely come back and we can continue that conversation because there's so much more to talk about.
Yeah, no, like I said, I've got that San Diego Comic-Con exclusive Giganta. And it's, I think when we get, that into so that, where cute. She first shows up in Secret yeah. Society, that'd be a great mm-hmm. one to have her on for. So we might have to have her back on for that one.
Oh yeah. I'm going to just jot that down. And yes, I think she will come back.
She seemed like she enjoyed herself.
If she can swing it, because she is exceedingly busy. I mean, she may be one of the biggest voiceover stars. You know, we didn't even talk about video games.
No.
And hello. my God.
I just listed when I was going through her database, I just threw out some quick ones that were like, these are superhero related. And we could have spent a full hour reading her IMDb page and nothing else.
I know.
So it's impressive.
Right. Guinness Book. I think she has the most credits.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Actor. Yeah, I think she is in the Guinness Book. So that conversation will continue when we have her back on. But
Wow. I mean, because it, and it's also a very complicated episode. There were so many aspects to it. I really enjoyed just sitting back on this one. I didn't, I wasn't too chatty because I didn't know so much about this. This isn't a world I know a lot about. I still can't wait for us to do our daytime episode with Kim Schreiner so we can finally talk about soaps. But I don't really know that much about this. So it was so educational to just sit back and let the three of you geek out and, and talk shop.
Yeah. This was, I think, a lot of fun. And I think the amount of fun, because just the grins on everyone's face as I took a screenshot.
Right?
I need to start remembering to do that. I need to start doing that at each episode. Take a screenshot of the people who we've got on for the promotional aspect of putting this out. Look who we had on today. But it's just the joy in every single one of your faces. Jennifer was talking. She was making this gesture like this because she was, and Phil had this big grin, and Dan's leaning into the camera, and you were sitting back smiling. And just, I'm like, I got to take a picture of this because it's just, if
I'm actually smiling now, still smiling.
if warmth had a picture, that was the picture I took. Just the it just was wafting off of my iPhone, which isn't a feature it's supposed to have because it's only an iPhone 10. So, I'm very impressed.
Wow. Well done.
Yeah. But this is another one, as we say, in the can. We did it again. We're blowing right through them story by story here. And I feel like it's just this, it's almost like we're paddling gently in a warm pool towards the other end of the pool. We're slowly taking our leisurely way through the series. And I'm excited for everything we've got to come next.
Yeah. And we do know, I mean, we do have some really exciting things coming up. And why not take our time, right? There, I mean, that's the beauty of this project. It's not like we've been hired.
Right.
To do, you know, it's not like we have a hard out. We have a deadline. No, it's like we're just, and I love that if it dawns on us to include somebody else like it did today, that we make that, we try to make that happen. I think the fans will really appreciate, they always appreciate hearing Dan Reba.
Yeah.
And I mean, who doesn't want to listen to Phil Lamar
right.
talk about comics?
And we got so many kind comments on our last one. People were so excited to hear Stan and Maria. Like people were over the moon that we had both of them. So I think we just keep adding people until it's 12 of us all talking about. We'll see how it goes. Well,
and with Stan and Maria, I don't think they had seen each other since the show ended. And it's just very sweet and nostalgic. You know, they talk about warm smiles on their faces.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so
well done you. I mean, that was really, well, shucks. Thanks.
So as we wrap up, if people want to keep up with you, find out more about you personally, professionally, where do people go? Website, social media handles, things like that.
Okay. So SusanEisenbergVoice.com is my website. And, on social media, it's all the same. Susan Eisenberg and the number one. Susan Eisenberg one. So yeah, you can find me there. And, you know, I love hearing from people. So please reach out if you have questions, comments, but, you know, just be kind.
That's right. It's all we ask that of everyone, please be kind. And of course, we do a live radio show every Sunday on 550 AM KTRS in the St. Louis area.
You said we, like you and I do it. And yes, I am unofficially your co-host,
True.
But you have to be clear. Because you do the live radio show.
And I always say we because I've got Joey V in the studio with me who helps
That's
us out
right.
with this podcast, by the way. Joey V helps us out. And I wouldn't still be doing my radio show if not for Joey V. So I always say we broadcast because Joey's usually right across the table from me in the control room. So we broadcast on 550 KTRS, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific every Sunday night. So if you're wanting to tune in, you can also do the app. Or you can stream us on Facebook and YouTube. We do video when Joey is in studio with me. So you can see some of our previous episodes at geektomeradio.com. Or if you would, go to my YouTube, youtube.com/geektomeradio. Hit the subscribe button because I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers by, I forget the deadline I set for myself. But anyway, we're on our way there now. We just had a great conversation with producer Michael Uslan, who did all the Batman movies. That's a great interview. I've got one with director Joe Dante because this is the 40th anniversary of Gremlins. We had Nicole Maines on, who was on Supergirl, and she's writing the new Suicide Squad comic for DC. So I've had a lot of great interviews recently as we ramp up to our 400. So please check us out and subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'd greatly appreciate it. And you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Geek2Me Radio.
And speaking of subscribing, if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe to the pop, you know, to the podcast and leave a review. You know, we'd love to hear from people. We want to know what you're thinking and feeling about the podcast. So please subscribe.
And so as we move on to our next episode, but for now,
stay tuned because the conversation continues.